The closest most of us get to celebrities is watching them on the big screen. Rick Lyman has gotten even closer. He's watched movies with Kevin Costner, Denzel Washington, Ron Howard, and John Travolta, to name just a few. Lyman reports on film for the New York Times. He wrote a series of articles for the Times called Watching Movies. The premise was to invite various directors and actors to choose a favorite film or a movie that really meant something to them for one reason or another. And then Lyman sat down with them and talked about the film while they watched. These articles have been collected into a book. It's called Watching Movies: The Biggest Names in Cinema Talk About the Films That Matter Most. Woody Allen picked George Stevens' Western Shane. Allen's choice surprised Lyman. Lyman was also surprised by what happened when he met Allen.
When I went in, he was sitting there and he says, "Oh, I hope you don't mind, but I've prepared a statement on the reason that I chose Shane, and I've typed it up," and he pulled out this piece of paper that had been typed up and things crossed out, and he looked, obviously done a lot of work on it, "and I'd just like to read it into your tape recorder." Okay. So I hand him the tape recorder, and he sat there for however long it took, 5 or 10 minutes, to read the statement into the tape recorder.
Now, this was not running according to your script for the
well,
afternoon, was it?
It wasn't the usual way it happened. And the movie starts up, and I tend to be one of those people who doesn't like talking during a movie and certainly doesn't like to be sitting near people in a movie theater where they're jabbering away while the movie is on. So I understand that there's something a little off-putting about doing that. But that was generally, that was the idea of the series. So I start asking questions about the credit sequence or maybe one of the first shots of, the deer kind of disappearing and then you see Shane for the first time. And he's giving me, no, to the very kind of one-word answers. And finally looked over and said, "Well, I'm not going to be able to talk while the movie's on. I got to watch the movie." I said, "Well, that's the whole idea of what we're doing here." I said, "Well, I can't do that." I said, "Well, what do you recommend?" He goes, "Well, how about if we watch it for about 20 minutes, then we'll shut it off, and we'll talk about it, and then we'll start it up again, and we'll do it in segments like that." I said, "Oh, okay, if that's the way you want to do it." So that's the way we did it, and it worked out fine, but it took 4.5 hours to watch Shane that way. So, I was happy to do it that way. I just didn't think that anybody would want to commit that kind of time.
In the introduction to your interview with Ung Lee, you said that he was, I think you said he was the most passive-aggressive subject in the series. What did you mean?
Yeah, he's extremely soft-spoken and very polite and deferential, but the things that he wanted to have happen, he insisted on them happening. He was very quiet about it and very kind of passive about it, but he insisted that I watch this movie before we sat down to watch it together. I could find a copy of it nowhere. So he had a copy of it, his only copy of it. This took place in New York, down in his offices, which was down on Canal Street. And he wanted me to come down there, pick up the cassette, go back to either the New York Times or my hotel room with the VCR and watch this movie. It was about 3 hours long. And then the next day come in and we watch it together. So I came into New York. It was a little later than I thought. I thought, maybe I would rather have dinner with friends than watch this three-hour movie tonight in my hotel room. And so I wasn't all that eager about heading down to Canal Street to pick it up. And he basically had his assistant stalk me all over town, and they were calling and, you have to watch this movie, you have to do it. And finally, the guy, I agreed to meet him at the New York Times the next morning quite early because we were doing it early, maybe 7 a.m. And this poor assistant shows up at 7 a.m. with this cassette. We had a little room there, a little TV room. And I went in there and plugged it in. And the guy, he sat outside the whole time to make sure that I watched the movie. And I poked my nose out and said, you don't really have to stay here. No, it's okay. And I'm sure that he was told that he had to make sure that I watched the movie. And so I sat there and watched the movie for 3 hours, and then, thank you very much, we went downstairs, got in a taxi cab, went down to Canal Street, and then I watched it all over again with Ang Lee. He insisted that that happened.
Was it worth it?
Yeah, well, of course he was right. I mean, he's always right. He's Ang Lee. But
sounds like a little passive-aggressive response from you there.
Does it? It was a good idea because he was right, that if I hadn't watched it, I wouldn't have known what was going on. I would have been sitting there reading the subtitles the whole time, trying to figure out what was happening so I could think of things to ask him.
There's another that I'm very curious about, I have to confess. I read it and enjoyed it, and I'm curious to know whether you really enjoyed the experience as much as it appears you did from the interview. I want you to tell me about Sissy Spacek.
Oh, it was terrific. I had a great time because, for one thing, it was she picked a movie that's one of my personal favorite movies. The picture that she chose was To Kill a Mockingbird, which is always very emotional when I watch it. There are two or three scenes in it that get me every time I see it, and I've seen it many times. And so for her to pick it, and then she grew up in a town very much like the town in the movie. It was in eastern Texas instead of in Mississippi, or was it Alabama in the film? I don't know. But, it was a small southern town that was dominated by the big courthouse, and it was the same kind of town that she grew up in, with the same kind of racial strife, and some of the things that the little girl in the film did, she remembered doing growing up, like having a little cigar box that she kept her treasures in, which is, a big part of the movie, and in fact is the opening credits of the movie, the little girl going through the things in her cigar box. So it was a great experience, it really was, and I don't know if it was the most fun I had, but it was certainly at the top.
What's very different from, say, the experience with Woody Allen or Ang Lee, they analyzed the film that you were watching. Sissy Spacek did some of that, saying things about shots, but it seemed much more personal somehow with her.
Well, I think part of that is that the actors, when they did the series, tended to respond to things more emotionally, as opposed to directors who tended to respond to things analytically. So that was part of it. And the other part of it was, it's true that she did react that way about how it related to her own life. But I think that was a thread that ran through almost all the pieces. And that people, when they're talking about something that they love very much and their guard lets down a little bit, they're really talking to a large extent about themselves. That was certainly the idea going into the series, and I think that's the way that it worked out in most of the cases. People, even when they were being analytical.
Well, I was thinking with Sissy Spacek, there was a moment when, I think it's the moment, the scene when Atticus Finch shoots the mad dog. And she is very taken with this, very emotionally involved in it, in your story, and then says, I wonder whether Gregory Peck decided to twiddle his glasses there or whether that was the director. And you realize that she is watching it on two levels at the same time.
Mr. Finch, this is Cal. I swear to God, there's a mad dog down the street apiece. He's coming this way.
Go near that dog, you understand? He's just as dangerous dead as alive.
Yes.
Did your experience watching movies with these people change the way that you now view not just these movies, but movies in general?
I don't think so. I'd always been, analytical about the way I watch movies. I don't think that I think it definitely changed the way that I watched the movies that were part of the series, because there were almost every one of them, there were things that the people brought up that hadn't occurred to me that made me see the movie in a different way. There's several of them. In fact, I think that I went out and bought almost all of them on DVD because I knew that I wanted to have them to watch in the future to relive the experience in a way. And I've gone back and, I've watched High Noon a few more times, which is a movie that I've never been particularly fond of. And I did it in the series with Wolfgang Petersen. He was a young boy in Germany right after World War II and saw in that movie kind of this beacon of America, this golden land on the other side of the world, that even before he had any thoughts of living in America, and that there were things in it that he saw that were kind of courageous in a way that he felt the adults in the world, the post-war world around him, were not being courageous. And so it's extremely different, to watch that movie now and to see it, to think about it through that lens.
If I were going to watch one movie with you, which would you choose?
I think it had to be a Billy Wilder movie. I would either Double Indemnity or probably Double Indemnity. That's the one that I go back to again and again. I love that movie. I also love Howard Hawks, His Girl Friday, probably one of those two movies.
Have you imagined what you would say about them while watching them?
No, I haven't. I insist that you watch it first, though, before.
Rick Lyman reports on film for the New York Times. His book is called Watching Movies. The biggest names in cinema talk about the films that matter most.